Welcome, everyone, to Opinion Havers, a movie podcast for people named. I'm Cody.
I'm Tyler.
Tyler, what did we watch?
We watched Kill Bill.
Yeah, we did.
We watched it. One single movie. Two parts.
Yes.
Two parts of a three-part movie that that are watched as a one part of a three-part movie.
If you want to get the full deal, the most out of the movie, out of the three-part series, you watch parts one and two.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you get a time machine and travel forward in time 20 years where they still haven't made Kill Bill Volume 3.
But they've put out a trailer.
They've put out a real trailer, or it might be another fan-made trailer. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh.
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 Kill Bill?
Yeah.
Tarantino? What number Tarantino movie is this for you?
That we've done a podcast on?
That you've seen.
That I've seen?
Three?
Four?
Four?
I think.
Glorious Bastards? Kill Bill? Pulp Fiction? Where's your four?
I'm trying to think. I've seen another one.
Django? You haven't seen Django.
Haven't seen Django. Let me... You know what? You tell...
How about I just name all his movies right now?
Yeah, do it.
Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, Kill Bill, the one about the car,
Death Proof. The one about the car.
Death Proof, Glorious Bastards, Hateful Eight, Django Unchained. That's eight. He's done eight movies. He has a couple scripts too.
Look, I'm looking at a list.
I named eight movies. He has eight movies.
Only eight movies.
Be proud of me.
Only eight.
How are you not proud of me?
Does he only actually have eight movies?
Yeah.
I don't know that much about him.
And most of his movies, it'll say, like, the third film by Quentin Tarantino. So, like, Inglourious Basterds was, like, the sixth film. And then I remember Hateful Eight was, like, the eighth film by Quentin Tarantino. I was like, oh, yeah. And it says eight in the title. Isn't that fun?
It does. There is a thing. What are the eight Quentin Tarantino
movies? Oh, did I nail it?
I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to your list.
I could do it again. All right. Here we go.
Do it again.
Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, Kill Bill, Death Proof, Inglourious Basterds, Django Unchained, Hateful Eight.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So you've seen three.
Yeah, I was thinking of Sin City, which he helped make, but it was mostly Rodriguez, I believe.
Roberto. Rodriguez, I believe is how it's pronounced.
Mm-hmm. And Frank Miller.
Franklin?
Frank Miller.
Franklin Miller?
Yep. Robert Rodriguez Roberto. And Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Which, so? If you search Quentin Tarantino, it replaces the Q with a K.
What?
Yeah. Like, if you just click
like
on
his name. K-W or K-U?
K-U. I'm showing Cody.
What?
Yeah. So it pulls up with a Q.
Quentin. Wow.
That's
amazing.
Yeah. I don't know.
So... Just lay it on me. What were your first thoughts?
I thought, much like I'm getting the feeling with most of his movies that I've seen, all three of them, and I'm somewhat familiar with the other ones, the idea of the other ones.
Yeah.
That when he makes a movie, it's almost like he takes a genre or a type of movie he grew up watching.
Mm-hmm.
And just is like, I just want to make that, but how I thought it would be awesome when I was seven to make. And he just does it. And I love it. Like, this is a very well... It's like if someone took the most awful, cheesiest kung fu movie from the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And just like, what if we tried to make it the best?
Yeah.
But we still made it awful and cheesy on those levels. That's Kill Bill.
Yeah, it's... He's really interesting in that way, where you can tell he's a very good screenwriter and a very good filmmaker, and he does everything intentionally. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's intentionally cheesy as like a love letter to those cheesy movies he grew up with. It's very interesting in that way. Like this one, it was like, oh, a cheesy kung fu revenge story. All right, let's roll with that. But let's get the guy who choreographed the fight scenes for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and let's have some really beautiful shots and, you know, all that.
Yeah, and they even down to, like, when they would fight, they would have the little whoosh, 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 whoosh sounds. like she does a thing where she flicks her hair and there's a very aggressive whoosh sound.
Yeah.
With the hair flick. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be real nice.
Yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I definitely like this one. Some people love this one. I think it's very good. It's not my favorite of his, but I do think it's one of his better ones.
I think I still like Pulp Fiction better than this one.
I think Pulp Fiction is probably his best movie. I really do, but then again, I haven't seen Django Unchained.
You haven't seen it? You don't know? Did you know? DiCaprio, he really cut his hand.
I heard that.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
That's a little known fact. No one knows that.
Did you know in Inglourious Basterds when what's-her-name's getting choked, those are Tarantino's hands?
I did not know that. Did you know that the guy, when he hits him with the bat, actually knocked him out?
I told you that. You stole that fun fact from me.
If it's not on a podcast, you didn't
tell
me that. I worked
so hard on that fun fact.
I don't think you told me that. I think I was at dinner with Quentin Tarantino and he told me that, I'm pretty sure. We're pretty good friends. That's why I don't watch his movies. Yeah, Quentin, you know? Yeah. It's like you can't, I don't want to, you know, I know him so well that it's just weird to watch his movies, you know?
Yeah. After hearing him tell those stories. Mm-hmm. A lot of people didn't know this, but his movies are actually based on his real life experiences.
Yep.
So after hearing him tell the stories behind all the movies, it's weird to like actually watch it on screen.
Exactly.
Like the yellow jumpsuit with the black stripe that Uma Thurman wears in this movie.
Yep.
That's actually his real jumpsuit that he wore when he went to Japan.
Yeah. Cody, can I address a very serious issue right now?
Yeah.
What's the deal with Quentin Tarantino and feet?
You know, that's one of his staples, his feet shots of people walking, their shoes. A lot of times it's shoes. I don't know if he has a foot fetish, but I know for a fact he has an Uma Thurman foot fetish because she's barefoot in Pulp Fiction a lot too. I feel like half the time she's on screen in Pulp Fiction, she's not wearing shoes.
I feel like most girls on screen don't wear shoes in his movies. I feel like there's a lot of no shoes or sandals.
I think it's just Uma
Thurman. I'm not trying to kink shame anybody. I'm just wondering, it's a legitimate thing of like, is it just an aesthetic choice of where he places the camera in a shot? Or is it because he loves it?
Like, he's got a bunch of B-roll of feet that he just like watches at night before he goes to bed?
There's something wrong with that. Okay, but in the way he frames the movies, I don't think he doesn't do anything wrong. I don't think there's anything inappropriate about the shots he chooses. I just think it's like very obviously there's a reason.
He always has one. I think in every movie he's got at least one or two. What I think is interesting, it's not an angle everyone does. And I don't know if it's a choice of like, what can you discern about the character from their feet? Because normally you're just seeing their face and their head. I don't know.
I think it's probably
like the way they walk, more likely of the way their feet look, what shoes they're wearing.
I can see the shoes thing, but it's a lot of bare feet.
Like in Inglourious Basterds, I think they have a few, but it's like boots. They're wearing boots and stuff because they're in the army.
Yeah. I'm just, you know.
I don't know.
We'll do, so that's for next week when we record the foot podcast.
We're going to get a local podiatrist and then another guy who has a foot fetish. We're going to do a little round table.
We're going to get Steve on here.
Yeah, Steve the podiatrist.
Guy. No, well, Steve's the guy with the foot fetish. Jerry's the podiatrist.
Dr. Jerry.
Yeah, I don't know if Jerry has a foot fetish. That'd be kind of unprofessional. But you never know.
I don't know.
But anyway, there's samurai swords in this movie. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, do you want to do the honors of our 30-second plot?
I'll explain it.
Summary? Yeah, tell me.
Let me center my chi, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know what that is.
So, Uma Thurman. She gets shot in the head. Yep. But she didn't die. And then she gets a list. And she starts crossing names off the list. And then she kills someone who I believe in my heart is Raiden from the Mortal Kombat movies.
Yeah.
And so she crosses the names off the list. There's some trademark infringement with another assassin going on that I found just blatant and awful, you know. But we'll go over that in a moment.
All right.
There's a guy with a shotgun, and there was an episode of Mythbusters involved. And then she kills an old man by giving him a heart attack.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert for the end of Kill Bill.
Cool. That's like spoiling the end of John Tugger die must die or John dies at the end. That's John
okay.
Dies.
Okay, all right. So let's two talk about movies. Let's talk about the two movies you just talked about.
Because John Tugger number must one, die.
John Tugger must die.
It's bunch where, of like, high school girls.
He cheats on all his girlfriends, and so they're all like, "Let's team up against him."
They do kill him.
And then there's the movie they? John Dies at the end. They don't kill him.
I thought they killed him.
They again. just prank him.
Horror. Oh, I thought he
they prank him left and right. There's no way they kill him.
I guess that's gonna be our next podcast. Okay,
next week, Foot Fetish. Week after that, we're watching John Tucker Must Die and John. How about we watch John Tucker Must Die and John Dies at the End side by side? At the same time, wouldn't that be
I've
fun?
I've never seen John Must Die. John Dies at the End?
It comes highly recommended by my brother.
And we all know your brother does something and used to live in California or still lives in California.
Yeah, he's a moon scientist. It's his actual job position.
That's pretty cool. I was going to make fun of it, but that's pretty cool.
Moon scientist. All right. So anyway, great job on that plot summary.
Mm-hmm. So I think I summarized it.
Let's just dive into it. Shall we?
Let's get right into it.
All right. Let's get on the one-way flight.
Why do you put...
What?
Before we get on the flight.
All right.
Why do you put... If you're someone who works in a hospital with an eye patch, tell me. Would you put a red cross on your eye patch?
You know, I'm just going to go out and... I'm going to say it. It's a bold style choice.
It is bold.
And she pulled it off. All right?
Did she?
She 100% did.
I don't know.
She didn't look suspicious.
Not at
she
all.
She didn't draw any attention to herself.
Nope.
Can you imagine if you're an assassin and you got a big old eye patch? Isn't that just a huge tell? Like when you go places to kill people, wouldn't you be like, oh, hey, it's that blonde girl in a foreign country wearing an eye patch. Why is she here?
Yeah. Also, if you see someone, you're at the hospital, right? Especially if you're a nurse or something, right?
Yep.
And you're in the hospital, and this sketchy-looking person with a bag and wearing all leather comes in and just goes into a broom closet and then comes out dressed like a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a nurse.
Yeah.
It's not where you change.
That's a good point. You know, and I think Tarantino's making a really important point here.
Hospital and security?
Is that nurses are understaffed, underpaid, and overworked. And they don't have time to be security at their hospital. And he's saying that we need to appreciate nurses and pay them the wages they deserve and staff them the way they need to be so that our patients can be safe and our nurses can have the quality of life that they need to do their jobs well.
I like how you sucked your chin into your neck after you said that. I like how that's how you finished that statement.
That's definitely what he was going for, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Tarantino, nothing is accidental. And it's all very political.
Always.
Right. When he says the N-word in Pulp Fiction, he's making a point. Okay, I'm not going to pursue that.
I think we covered that for about 10 minutes or something in the Pulp Fiction episode.
Cut that out, right?
I mean, you get real racist.
Or did you just cut it shorter to make me sound more racist?
A little bit of both, I would say, you know.
Wonderful.
I would say I beeped some words that weren't racial slurs to make them sound like racial slurs, but I digress. So let's hop on our plane that magically allows everyone to have samurai swords. Mm-hmm. Every seat comes with a samurai sword.
I did like that touch that she's just riding in the plane with her samurai sword. She's everywhere. She's got a samurai sword in the back of her car. She's got a samurai sword on her motorcycle.
Cody.
Yeah.
She wasn't the only person on that plane with a samurai sword.
Hold on. Who else had a samurai sword?
Just some random dude had a samurai sword next to his seat.
Really?
Yeah, like, so there's a shot where you're across the aisle.
Yeah.
If you look back there, right? Because we're on the plane at this point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So over there, you see, so here's where the shot was taken. I'm going to squeeze back in these seats here, okay?
All right.
So here's where the shot was taken. You see Uma Thurman with her samurai sword.
Yeah.
Here's the seat the camera sat in. Mm-hmm. Here's another seat. here's another samurai sword. You see the samurai sword here? It's like they have holsters for samurai swords.
Like we have cup holders, they have samurai sword holders.
Which I think, first off, because they were in a, I believe they were in a Japanese airline at the time, said on the side of the plane, something, some foreign airline.
Yeah.
And what I say to that of more than one samurai sword on the plane is, first off, Quentin Tarantino, how dare you? That's racist. And second off, I want to ride on an airplane that has a samurai sword holder, a katana.
I just imagine people who
want
to
correct me. Holder for every seat. I want it.
They just have like a little cart, and they're like, "Would you like a samurai sword?"
Well, see, that's the thing. Do they supply it, or do you have to bring your own?
I mean, Uma Thurman brought her own.
She did. Hers is probably better than all the other ones too.
I mean, it's a Hattori Hanzo sword.
Hattori Hanzo.
Yeah. So sometimes they say Hanzo.
Yeah, much like in the thing they ripped off for the name.
Yeah.
Overwatch.
Yeah, that's true.
Some people say Hanzo.
Quentin Tarantino actually used to work on Blizzard, and
they worked on
word on the street is that he worked on Blizzard, and then he left the company to make this movie, and he had insider information.
Now we did discuss, because you said Hanzo, he doesn't have a samurai sword. Yeah. But what I said to you is, he makes the swords, Cody.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't use the swords, Cody. He uses a bow.
And
right?
Arrows.
Hanzo uses as well. Bow, right? Yeah, Hanzo is the bow guy.
Yeah.
He makes Genji's
Oh, look swords. At you. Look at your knowledge.
Yes.
Of the youth culture.
Mm-hmm. I'm hip. I'm amazing. With it. You know?
They're brothers.
I don't know if that's true or not.
No, they are.
Are they?
Yeah. Hanzo and Genji.
See, there you go. The plot thickens. So, we're on this flight. It's going to take about, I don't know how far we'll play. This is like
about
17
what?
Hours, 24 hours, something
like that. Let's say 14.
So, we'll be here for a while. So, we're just going to sit more. In calm silence for the next 14 hours.
That went by a lot faster than I thought it was going to.
It's only been a few seconds.
You.
All right.
I needed you to yes and me.
No.
At that moment.
I stopped you.
You
said
no.
I said no. It's been about 2 seconds.
All right. For the realist.
So we're here. We're here in Quentin Tarantino's foot world in Kyoto, Japan. So, Cody, we're sitting here. Tell me the spoilers of Kill Bill.
Oh, I got
spoilers.
It.
Spoilers.
Oh.
She kills Bill.
Yeah. Other spoiler, her daughter's alive. Amazing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
There's an old guy. He wishes his beard. He goes whoosh with the beard a lot. He goes wish whoosh.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
Because the guy is obviously like 32 years old.
Yeah.
And they just stuck a white wig on him.
Yeah. I wonder, maybe I should have done more research on this, because I know Pai Mei is like a character across several movies, so I don't know if he's part of like any sort of legend or whatever or story.
He's part of Quentin Tarantino's or Quentin Tarantino's, as Google would have you call him. Yeah, I don't know. Let's see, fictional character, Legendary Five Elders. It looks like he's a real fictional Chinese character.
A real fictional character?
Like, actually, so he's not just made up by Quentin Tarantino. Okay, it took me to a different thing.
Bakme, also known as Hakabakme, Baime, Paime, Pakme.
So it looks like he's based on the Bakme guy. And he just changed his name to Paime.
Yeah, an alternate name for
him. In Bakme, just so you guys know, not an Olympic sport.
Oh.
Now you know.
There you go.
Also, she goes to learn Kung Fu, but it says here, I'm getting the vibes as I read through this, that it's a style in and of itself.
Yeah, style of martial arts.
So it's not Kung Fu. It is, in fact, Pai Mei.
Wonderful.
Or Bak Mei, or Pai Mei in Quentin Tarantino's world. Which cool. is a world we all want to live in.
According to this page, it's he's an actual historical figure. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
From the 1600s.
He killed a bunch of people. Good That's friend. How old he was.
Amazing.
He was an old guy?
Oh.
There were so many old guys, but there was only one actually old guy.
Yeah, that was
weird. Everyone else was young guys playing old guys.
Yeah.
But enough about the vague thing where we're saying words that probably mean nothing because we haven't said anything about the movie yet. So what did you think about the cinematography, Cody? Since we usually talk about cinematography, score, sound design.
I'm always impressed by Quentin Tarantino's song choices. I think they always fit the movies very well. I thought this one was no different. Really cool music. I thought that part of it was awesome. There's that weird sound effect they do, the
It goes on. I think I think it goes on like 2 seconds longer than it should go on.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, all right, well.
And it's usually like a close up of her eyes.
And it just zooms in more and more and more. And I'm like, are we gonna get like inside of her eye? But you never get inside the eye.
No, you don't. Oh my gosh. Chairmont is broken. It's fine. All right. So, yeah, I enjoy the cinematography. Yeah. I loved that they did some, especially the stuff in the past, they'll do in black and white a lot of the times in this movie, which is cool. And then some of the fight scenes turn to black and white. There's like the silhouette fight scene they do in the first volume.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that whole part of it was really cool.
Which I believe you were right in that they did it to get away with having that much blood on the screen, that much gore.
Yeah.
Which was, it looked cool and it had a real purpose to do it. And I thought, I was like, I bet you for some of those shots where someone's spraying blood, they literally just threw water instead of anything with coloring in it to save money. But I don't know. It's Quentin Tarantino, man. Who knows what he's done? Who knows the awful things he's done while shooting his movies?
Yeah. This one's interesting too because the first,
just the eyes you gave me when I said that. Yeah. Anyway, the interesting thing about this movie.
No, I was just going to point out. So one of the first people, so the first person she fights, Vivica Fox. It's like one of the opening scenes.
Yeah, Copperhead, I think, right?
Yeah, Copperhead. They fight, which is a cool scene. My favorite part about that scene, well, two things. Number one, they're fighting in the living room as the bus pulls up to drop off her daughter. So they're like about to kill each other, and then daughter like runs into the house and they're like, sup, go to your room. Anyway, and then when they're like talking, she has a gun hidden in her cereal box.
She's prepared.
I never see that coming. I'm always like, that's such a cool detail. Or just like, she goes to pour a bowl of cereal and all of a sudden there's just cereal everywhere as she's shooting the gun. Yeah. Love it.
It's much like, did you ever see the show Burn Notice?
I have not had the pleasure.
It's a pretty cool spy show because he like explains a bunch of spy stuff, right? And he acts like spies really do, where he runs away a lot.
Yeah.
But there's a episode where someone breaks into his home, his place of residence, right? And he falls down. He takes cover behind the counter, and he, instead of opening, punches through a cabinet and grabs a gun that he has duct taped underneath the cabinet,
yeah,
or underneath the counter. Very similar vibes into like. It makes you wonder, where else are guns hidden? Like,
yeah.
Like, where else are all of the guns? If you have one in the Lucky Charms, what else has a gun in it? What else is a gun?
Nowhere is safe.
Yeah.
Like, if it's in the Lucky Charms box, it could be anywhere else in the house.
And what if your daughter got in the Lucky Charms box?
Yeah.
What if the daughter put the gun in the Lucky Charms
box? You know what? I think I figured it out. Her daughter has a gluten allergy. So she would never be in the Lucky Charms.
That's good. That's good.
He thinks of everything. Yeah, and then I was going to say, so the next person they introduce is Lucy Liu's character. What's her? She's the Asian one in Japan with the Yakuza.
It's a letter dash a word. I know that.
Well, I was going to say her origin story. It's so interesting that they go to like an anime sequence.
Yeah,
to show her origin story, and I think it's really cool.
Yeah, that was pretty
cool. And it also, that has like super, super over-the-top blood spray everywhere.
Yeah, but it's like a, almost like an, not even so much an anime, almost like the graphic novels, where it's like very minimal movement to the image.
Yeah.
Except for usually the blood spray.
Oh, yeah.
Oren, that's what it was.
Oren, yeah.
Oren.
which I thought was a cool character. My favorite part of that sequence with the ridiculous blood spray is the part where she's on top of the guy that killed her family. Mm-hmm. So she stabs him, and the blood sprays everywhere. And then you see her outline behind her of where the blood didn't spray. Mm-hmm. It made like a little...
It was cool.
Stencil of her. I will agree with that. So cool.
I will agree with that. That was pretty cool. I liked it. I liked it.
Mm.
A lot. All right. But the 17-year-old girl with the ball, the spiky ball.
Spiky ball chain, I believe is the official name.
Yeah.
What about her?
It was a cool fight. That was pretty dope. She's all swinging it. I had just watched the episode of Family Guy where they did all the different directors like making an episode of Family Guy.
Yeah.
And they made a joke about how the only Asian character is Trisha Takanawa. So she was all of the crazy 88, every single one of them. And then she's sitting there and she was swinging the ball. And she's like, "You can tell I'm a boss character because I have a different weapon. And I'm approaching you slowly with confidence."
Yeah.
And it was really funny. And I watched that and I was like, it was a cool scene. It was a cool fight. There was, as you pointed out, several people that were definitely in that crowd more than once, which I thought was funny.
Yeah. I mean, that's the benefit of having them all dressed the same and wear face masks.
Yeah. There was Charlie Brown.
Yeah, Charlie. I love how they're, okay, so there's a guy who works at the restaurant they're at, or the club or whatever. He has like a Japanese like robe, not a kimono. You'd call it kimono, right?
I think it's a kimono.
He's wearing a yellow kimono with the black stripe, a la Charlie Brown.
It's very obviously a Charlie Brown.
And so I was like, oh, okay, he's got like Charlie Brown robe. But then at the end, his credit is as Charlie Brown.
They call him Charlie Brown too.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah,
they call him. I thought they were making fun of him.
I think that's the thing, is they were making fun of him, but then he's credited as Charlie Brown.
His credit is just Charlie Brown, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, so yeah, it was pretty funny. And then the fight scene, and then she cuts off a bunch of limbs. Mm-hmm. She doesn't actually kill all of them. She just cuts a lot of limbs off.
Yeah. I love that speech she gives right before she goes to confront Oren. She's like, "Everyone leave, but don't take your limbs. Those are mine." Everybody leaves.
And then she fights Oren.
Yeah.
And that was pretty cool. Because Oren's like, "Ha, you." She's like, first off, I thought it was funny when she's like, "White girl coming over here. You think you know?" And I was like, they literally referenced not 20 minutes before this. It was more than 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. But you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
I'm exaggerating like, for effect. That she was mostly...
She was American, Chinese, and Japanese. And all the Yakuza people had a problem with it.
Yeah.
At least one guy in particular. But yeah, that was funny that she's like, "I'm Japanese." And you're like, yeah, but shouldn't she understand? Shouldn't Oren have been more compassionate about Uma Thurman having a passion for martial arts, and in particular the art of the samurai sword?
No.
I love that scene. I love that they're in the snow.
Yeah.
And it goes from like the absolute just total action of the Crazy 88 fight, and then it's completely slow and quiet in the snow. There's the little fountain thing where it fills up and the bamboo goes bling bling
ba-dunk. Goes.
Yeah.
That doesn't make that sound.
Doesn't at all.
But I'd made it, and I don't know if it came through on the recording.
But it was such a cool contrast, and I think a cool way to end the film. Because I think a lot of action movies like to end on that, you know, there's like a crazy chase scene or whatever. They confront the bad guy, and it's over. But you don't always have like a quiet moment like they did to end the film.
Yeah. I'm looking at Lucy Liu's Wikipedia article, and I'm seeing that she is in fact American and Chinese.
Amazing.
Not Japanese. She might be, I don't know, Lucy Liu, if you're listening and want to come on the podcast, then yeah, you can come on and you can tell us your heritage. I would love to listen to it and meet you in person. You are a very attractive young lady of 49 years old. Yeah, you're invited. You're on the very short list of, I don't know how many people. I feel like we invite someone every episode. But I feel like it's been Quentin Tarantino 3 times.
Yeah, it probably has.
And he has not responded to the invite.
Not yet.
Has it been because we haven't uploaded any of them at this point?
I don't think that has any bearing on it.
I don't think so either.
I think when you say his name, I think he feels it in his heart.
Well, this would be the 3rd time we've invited him.
Like Beetlejuice.
But we haven't invited him yet, as far as I could tell. Because we said we were doing the Foot Podcast, but we didn't invite him to it.
That's true.
So maybe if we invite him, he will
appear. Honestly, I'm a little afraid.
That he might?
I'm afraid to get him in the middle of Foot Talk. I don't know what's going
to
happen.
I don't know either. I'm afraid to get Steve into it.
Well, I mean, Steve can control himself.
Yeah. Plus, we got that train gun in the corner. We can just hit him with it. If it gets too out of hand, you know?
That's true.
We can take
it. I have some Pop-Tart box. A little
train gun in it?
A little piece in it, you know?
Yeah. That broom over there is a train gun. So, I don't know how far into the movie we've discussed. I think we've discussed the first 15 minutes of it so far.
We talked about Lucy Liu. We talked about Volume 1. We talked about most of Volume 1.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So when this movie came out, I think it was somewhere between like 3 to 6 months between the two volumes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the first one came out. People were like, what's the deal? When's the next one? And he's like, just wait a little bit.
Just wait a little bit?
Yeah, the way Tarantino puts it is Kill Bill Volume 1 raises all the questions. Kill Bill Volume 2 gives you all the answers.
Do you feel that that's true? Because yeah. I don't feel it's as true as that.
It's not true.
I don't feel it's that simple.
You don't really mean...
There's so much more nuance to the story. I don't feel there's much nuance.
Yeah.
Literally snatches a girl's eyeball. That happens 3 separate times. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah.
She does it twice. The first one. She snatches someone's eye in the first one.
Right. And then there's that guy that spends the next 10 minutes clutching his eye.
Flopping around. Yeah, because we were watching the aftermath of the fight scene. And we were like, what's that guy doing? And then it's like, oh, that's the guy that lost his eyeball. And then L... She gets her eye snatched by Pai Mei.
You're right.
First thing, Pai Mei snatches it, and then Uma snatches it.
That was so... That was another thing. So just like in the first fight scene with Vivica A. Fox, when she pulls out the gun at the cereal... Where she shoots through the cereal box with the gun. Uh-huh. It was the same thing in the fight with...
L?
Yeah.
I don't know the full name of the character. I just saw it as L.
L Driver. She,
I just have Lucy Liu pulled up on my phone.
Their swords are clashed. And you have no idea what's going to happen. And out of nowhere, she snatches her eyeball.
But even
that was the last thing I thought was going to happen.
I liked, in that fight scene, I really liked he played with the concept of it was too small to fully draw the sword.
I love that.
In, like, while you're fighting somebody, because you'd, like, hit a wall or the ceiling. Like, you couldn't just draw
it. They were never in a position where they could easily take their sword out and actually fight with the swords.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until they both, like, got away from each other, drew the swords, and then started fighting again. But even before that, let's get into the copyright infringement.
Yeah, let's do it.
So when Bud, digging through his money,
mm-hmm.
What's in the money, Cody?
A snack.
What kind of snack?
A Black Mamba.
First off, L Driver.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you? That is Uma Thurman's code name.
Yeah.
And you stole her thing.
Yeah.
So she stole your eye. That's what I say.
Oh. Boom. Tit for tat.
I just blew your mind. Quentin Tarantino thinks of these things.
Nothing is accidental. Yeah. Oh, I love that scene.
Yeah, you're right. When they were locked together and that happened... You're right. It's the very last thing you would think.
Yeah,
would
the happen. Last way to resolve that fight was her getting her other eye plucked out so she couldn't see and fight.
Yeah. Never in a million years would I have guessed that was going to be the outcome.
That's crazy.
Of such a fight. Man. Bud gets bit on the face.
Like 3 times by one of the most venomous snakes in the world.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It would suck. And we talked, it's like, I think Quentin Tarantino, he's dedicated to his movies. Mm. I think he really had someone get bit in the face by a Black Mamba.
Yeah.
Even though, as I spouted very sarcastically, or alluded to, by saying that it was absolutely, definitely a real Black Mamba to Cody, probably just a black snake that you would find in your garden.
Yeah.
in most places in the U.S., I think.
Yeah. Well, it's a green snake.
Green snake.
With a black mouth. The inside of his mouth is black.
They spray painted it black.
Maybe they got it. They got like an intern with a Sharpie. Just coloring in the snake's mouth.
Look, if Quentin Tarantino came to you and said, I can get you a job, but you have to Sharpie the inside of a garden snake's mouth. Look, you got him or you got Weinstein, you know, and you, those are your two options. Are you going to, I'd Sharpie the snake's mouth. I'm not doing what Weinstein's going to ask me to do.
All right. That's a good point. In that scenario, I would work for Tarantino.
Yeah. Yeah, you would. Yeah. You would. But we've moved away from the point.
What point?
I don't know what the point is. We're just talking about Kill Bill. What left is there to talk about, man? We're talking about a movie that I just saw for the first time.
Can we talk about
15 years after it came out.
We talked about... Okay, let's talk more about Pai Mei. So that training sequence, what did you think of that?
Gosh. It's as dumb and played out as this sounds in like podcast reviews and stuff. When they say stuff is a love letter to something else.
Yeah.
I feel it is the best love letter to cheesy kung fu movies. That character and the way... Because he like... They had had the cheesy kung fu sound effects and stuff. And the choreography and the way it was shot and everything. Cinematography, that's the other word I was looking for. And he's like, any scene with Pai Mei, we're just going to dial that to 11.
Yeah.
We're just going to way over the top everything.
First off, he's whipping around his giant goatee thing.
Oh, he whips
his wispy long goatee.
Would you describe him as whipping his hair back and forth?
The original Willow Smith, Pai Mei.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing that. He's laughing at everything that what's-her-name does, and he's making fun of her for being white, for being foreign. He's like, your kung fu is lame, everything. And he just does the whole nine yards. For me, the pinnacle of that scene is when she extends her sword to try to hit him. He jumps up, lands on the sword.
Which is such a classic kung fu movie move where it's like, that's impossible, but that's so cool.
Yeah, I remember... When I was a kid, I saw Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is from the same era, I think, about a year or two before this one.
Mm-hmm.
And just like,
hi!
Go
get him! Go get him!
Andrew, what did you think of Kill Bill?
What did you think of Kill Bill, Andrew?
Andrew.
A little cheesy for my taste.
Yeah, well, you can get out.
Well, I'm going to have your opinion. Talk to me.
He almost said the name of the show.
He almost did. I'm glad he didn't, though.
I almost said
trademark.
What did I almost say?
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Kill Bill. What do you feel about Uma Thurman's feet? What are your feelings on it?
They're huge.
There you have it.
They're like flippers.
Yeah, they are kind of big.
Are they actually big, or do they just look big because there's so many close-ups of them in movies?
That's a good point. They seem kind of long.
They do seem kind of
long. All right, can you just real quick for me Google Uma Thurman shoe size?
Yeah,
I would bet it's on her Wikipedia page.
Don't they have like a website where it has like all the celebrities' dimensions?
Yes.
Like their height and their weight.
No, there's one specifically for feet. But I don't remember what it is off the top of my head.
Is there just some guy that works at the shoe store in Hollywood?
Yeah.
Do you guys want drugs? Dog drugs?
Dog drugs?
Andrew already had some people drugs. I mean, Tyler already had some people drugs.
I did have people drugs.
So. What kind of drugs?
All the good drugs.
Oh, like the IV?
Yep.
Oh, whoa,
exactly, man. That stuff.
Dude, he's crazy.
All right. We're moving away from the point here, but I need to see Uma Thurman's shoe size.
Oh, chair's broken.
I'm glad we're talking about this. 11.
What?
For reference, Cameron Diaz is a size 9 and Charlize Theron is a 9.5. It gave that to me without being asked, but it gave me that information.
Wait, how tall is Uma Thurman?
6 feet tall.
Uma Thurman's 6 feet tall?
She's 6 feet tall.
Makes sense why her shoes are so big.
Yep.
Wow.
You want me to see other shoe sizes? You want other shoe sizes, or are we going to save this for next week?
No, let's do it.
It took away the shoe sizes.
All right.
Sorry. sorry to tease you like that. Yeah. Cody, what's your size of you?
Cody, what's your shoe size?
Eight and a half.
Very 11 small. In Crocs.
Yeah. You're like I give you maybe a 10? You're a tenner?
Those are 11s or 12s, I can't remember.
11s?
They're big.
I was so close.
You know what they say about big shoes?
Big socks. Feet.
Big socks.
Big socks. I do
need big socks. What's up, Cody?
What's up?
There's so much more that it's not that much more in the movie to talk about. But she punches her way out of a coffin.
Yeah.
That's where the episode of Mythbuster ties in.
Yeah.
See, I'm bringing everything back from my explanation at the beginning. Because I said there's an episode of Mythbusters. I'm pretty sure they did a thing about, could you punch your way out of a coffin?
The answer is,
I probably could have told him in the beginning, you probably can't. No probably way. Can't do that.
Even if you did like punch through the coffin, you'd be drowned in dirt.
Yeah.
You're talking, you know, 6 feet of dirt. You're not getting through that.
Yeah.
Unless you're Uma Thurman.
Unless you're Uma Thurman.
Unless you're real hungry.
Or that. I'm interested to see how well his voice picks up on the recording.
Yeah, me too.
What are you looking up, Cody?
I'm not looking up.
Cody's sleuthing something? He's distracted. Look, I'm over here looking up Uma Thurman's shoe size. You gotta give me something.
I got nothing.
Is there nothing else you want to talk about this movie?
Oh, there's a lot I want to talk about.
There's a lot?
Just the way that scene was shot, I really liked. Because she gets in there with the flashlight.
Uh-huh.
And once she finally gets the flashlight on, it's, it's cool the way they close her into the coffin. You see it shutting little by little.
Yeah, when they're mailing
in. Close-ups of the hammer going in, and then you see the coffin just getting closed in until it's dark. And then you just hear her thud down into the grave. You hear the dirt fall over, then finally she turns on the flashlight, and you can see in black and white the inside of the coffin. I thought it was a really cool way to shoot it.
It was pretty cool. I have further updates on the Uma Thurman foot fiasco. All right. I found the site. It's called WikiFeet. She has 4 stars on WikiFeet, which would...
What does that mean?
It means she has nice feet. But
4 out of 5 stars for
four out of 5 stars, almost five, so 4 point something, right?
Yeah.
But she has 865 beautiful rankings, right?
What does that mean? What?
That's the 5th star, so that's 5-star ratings. Okay. So 865 5-star ratings.
Okay.
So 419, 4, 341, 3, 181, 2, and 256, 1. And to those 256 people, I say, how dare you?
How dare you?
How dare you?
We're talking about poison ivy.
Yeah. You gotta put tape on your lips.
You got to. Pro tip for you.
Here's a real thing. I don't know how listened to this podcast is going to be. I don't know how many people are going to make it through the Andrew debacle that just happened. Okay. Yeah. But if you've made it to this point, you're a true Opinion Havers fan, which means you're probably Jamie. Okay. I need you to tweet at Cody. It's at Opinion Havers. Tweet at him. Send him a tweet. Let him know if you want us to do a podcast on Batman and Robin.
I don't. Yes. Don't make me.
Tweet at him. We will sit. We will watch Uma Thurman and Schwarzenegger and whoever plays Batman in that one.
If someone's trying to seduce you, here's what you do.
Is Val Kilmer Batman and Batman and Robin?
It's obviously George Clooney.
Is it George Clooney?
Clooney.
I don't remember, dude. I was so enthralled with Uma Thurman in that movie, I didn't care. I forgot Schwarzenegger was in that movie, okay?
So much star power is packed into that movie. I was just going to say, if someone's trying to seduce you, pro tip.
Tape your lips.
Put a little tape on your lips. Won't work. They can't seduce you.
Hmm? What were we talking about again? All right. We watch Batman?
This is when we're going to get... This is my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite part of the movie. It's my favorite time to get to tell you about... Okay, so first off...
Yep.
This is shot in Southern California. The part where I'm from, in the Mojave Desert.
Yeah.
which is pretty cool. First off, the nightclub is right by my hometown's library. So you see the nightclub? That used to be a pizza parlor. It was a dance club. It was a pizza parlor. It was something else. Now it's torn down.
Now, when you say dance club, do you mean a dance club or a strip club?
I have no idea. I suspect just a dance club. It didn't have that vibe. I saw a lot of cars there during the day.
Okay.
So I suspect it was just like a...
You don't know. You're in the middle of nowhere. What else do you do in the desert?
Go to the library. That's the other thing. So from the other angle, when he's going in the background, that's my library that I grew up going to as a kid, as a little kiddo.
I would like to recommend to everybody that you Google Maps Victorville, California, and just like take a little street view, stroll down the street, because you think, oh, this is so close to LA, you know, it's they not... film movies in this town. It's like, oh, it's so famous, it's going to be so glitzy. No.
They film one movie in the town.
It's sketchy, people.
And some old Roy Rogers stuff. Okay, here's the thing. You saw...
referred to a street as meth alley or something. What was it?
I didn't
crack it alley. You said something. It was some drug.
I said that you were looking at D Street.
D Street.
And I have a friend who wrote a song about the meth addicts and prostitutes on D Street.
Exactly.
It's not like accurate. It's a, you know, it's a... Point is, here's the thing. A, that's the worst part of town. B, it's not a nice city. C... if you drive up D Street or turns into Highway 18, then you'll get to one of my favorite cafes in the whole world, Emma Jean's Holland Burger, which is in this movie. She breaks out of the coffin. She's all dirty, grubby, doesn't have any shoes. She walks up to the counter. She's like, sits down, can have a glass of water. Classic. I've heard diners in the movie, because Tarantino loves it, which makes sense. It has my favorite burger in the world. And now, go ahead and ask me about the burger.
How's the water there, Cody?
It's actually just okay.
Okay. But how are the burgers?
Okay, here's the thing. Burgers are good. But they have something called the Brian Burger. The guy who works there, Brian, makes his burger. It's called the Brian Burger. Take two thick slices of sourdough. You Parmesan crust the outside.
Mm.
And you grill it. Right, so the outside's all crispy, Parmesan crusted.
Right.
You take a nice, thick, juicy burger patty.
Mm-hmm.
You take some Swiss cheese either side of the burger patty.
Right.
Top with some Ortega chilies. Super cheesy, because you have Parmesan crusty cheese and melty Swiss cheese. A little bit of extra flavor coming from the green chilies and a juicy burger. It's fantastic. It's my favorite burger in the whole world. They're only open till 3 in the afternoon, so get there for lunch.
Well, they're too busy filming movies there.
Yeah.
They got to shut down for all the filming.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Oh, I love that place.
I like to imagine that they actually are open until, like, 9, but Quentin Tarantino has permanently booked the building.
Yeah.
From 3 till 9.
Oh, man.
Just in perpetuity.
If you're ever driving to Los Angeles.
And you feel like stopping in a sketchy town.
You just take a stop in Victorville. Go to Emma Jean's Holland Burger. Once again, it has to be breakfast or lunch because they close at 3. You got to go in there.
Yeah.
It used to be for until like maybe 4 years ago, they only took cash. So not only did you have to get there before 3 in the afternoon, you had to bring cash. It was a wonderful place.
So they were a drug front until about 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For all the drug dealers and prostitutes on D Street?
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful place. Not D Street, the cafe.
The cafe. Now, I will say, there's the sign there for historic Route 66 that goes across.
Yeah.
The sign looks like it alone is worth more than most of those buildings. And I was like, well, that's a very interesting choice of the city to make.
Yeah.
But it does look like you're in, like, it actually looks like you're in a Quentin Tarantino movie looking at those streets.
Yeah, that part of town definitely does. Oh, anyway, that's just a little sidebar. You should go there. Yeah. Brian's really nice.
Also, the church. They say it's in El Paso, Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Not in El Paso.
That's out in the desert off Avenue G.
Cody, tell me, how'd you super sleuth that out?
What?
Where the church was.
I saw a Joshua tree.
You saw a Joshua tree.
And creosote bushes.
Quentin Tarantino doesn't think of everything, people.
Yeah.
He doesn't think of everything. You done messed up, Quentin, or... Quentin or whatever Google calls you, if that is your real name, which it probably isn't. That's probably not his real name.
Quentin? Oh, I bet it is.
I don't know. Sounds fake.
If you're Quentin Tarantino, and you're listening real to this podcast, tweet us.
Send me a copy of your birth certificate and your social security card and your mother's maiden name and your bank account numbers if you're Quentin Tarantino. Oh, and then I'll believe you.
Anyway. That's it. Then she goes to fight Bill. That's it.
Yeah.
Until it's time to fight Bill.
I liked how that was handled because it could have just been an over-the-top fight scene.
Oh.
So easily.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
But Bill pulled the ultimate trump card.
And the buildup.
Yeah. She goes to the dude.
Yeah. The guy who runs the brothel.
Yeah. Is that what he did?
Yeah, that was a brothel.
I did not know that.
That's why he's like, if you were here in my heyday, you would have been my number one woman.
Mm.
Meaning that I would love to prostitute you. I would love for you to be one of my sex workers.
Would it be the because the madam's not a prostitute, and that, I guess the madam's the number one woman, right?
I don't know. I think he's saying you're hot. People pay a lot of money for sex work from you.
Yeah.
Anyway, I actually really like that part. I like that he's kind of got the crazy eyes.
Yeah, he's like, half.
He's like always like, and his eyes are like half closed all the time and like a little twitchy.
Yeah,
he's smoking.
He got some twitch to him.
He's like the leatheriest skin.
Yeah, and I thought it was, I would say, one of the coolest lines in the movie when he's like, "I'm gonna help you. Do you know why?" And then she's like, "No." He's like, "Cause Bill would want me to help you."
Oh, that was so okay.
And you're like, there's something else going on.
That's what was so cool, is that instead of, because the first four people she kills, it's like, okay, I'm going to fight this person. It's like big fight scene, a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like, okay, well, Bill's gonna be like the ultimate fight.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, he's not here to fight you. Like, he has something to tell you, or there's something going on. So then she shows up at the house and it's not a fight.
Yeah, he's
good. What happens?
She rounds the corner and she gets shot by Bill and a child.
What?
They have fake guns, but they shoot at her with the fake gun.
That's true. And so, like, she walks in the door and she pretends to get, you know, like you do when you're playing with a kid.
Yeah.
She pretends to get shot. And then her daughter's right there.
Can I?
Her daughter's alive.
Yeah. There's another little side tangent, too.
Do it.
When he's, like, narrating the story, which he does several times throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always like, oh my gosh. Like, I would listen to this guy read literally anything.
Yeah.
Like, he could tell me about how he went to the store on Tuesday. And yeah. I would pay $50 to listen to that. Unfortunately, he's not around anymore to do that. But I'm like, how is he not, like, a Morgan Freeman level narrator?
Mm. Yeah. He's got some interesting credits, too.
Yeah.
Been acting for a long time. He had, like, 237 credits on IMDb.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. But, so, yeah, so she shows up, and he's got their daughter.
Yeah.
Which wasn't really a spoiler, because it's the very first scene of the second movie is, Bill, it's your baby. And then he shoots her in the face.
Well, and then Bill's on the phone. Who's Bill on the phone with? Is it the end of the first movie? He's on the phone with someone. He's like, does she know this? Does she know that her daughter's still alive?
Yeah.
And so, like, we know it, but she doesn't know that.
She doesn't know it. And then you show up, and that baby is so cute.
Cute.
Oh, my gosh. She's so cute.
Adorable baby.
So cute.
I mean, how old do you think she was? Four?
I think she was four in the movie.
Four or so.
Seemed four in real life.
Yeah. So cute.
So cute.
So precious.
And they literally, they just act like... Like, she just goes with it. Like, she's just like, yep, I'm your mom. I've been asleep for a while. This is your dad. Act mm-hmm. like mom and dad until the baby's asleep. And then he shoots the TV. Yeah. Much like Elvis Presley.
Classic.
And then shoots her with a needle.
Mm-hmm. And this is another thing that's so... cheesy. It's like,
truth serum,
what?
But it's so much more potent than real-life truth serum.
Without the druggy after effects.
Yeah. So here's a question I have for you. What? Do you think he knew from the beginning that she was going to get there and she was going to kill him? Because I got the sense of just the way he acted and fought her that he was expecting her to win. Like, the way he acted when she got
it. It's hard to say because, well, I don't know if that's true. Because he very clearly was in control of the whole situation.
Uh-huh.
When he shoots the TV, when he shoots the two stream, you're like, okay, he's got her. So he can, you know, ask these questions and get his answers. And
well, I think that's the thing, is like, that's all he wanted. And then he was like, then we'll fight it out and you're probably going to win, but I want the questions answered before we do that.
That's such a good question.
You know?
I feel like...
Because he could have just shot her.
He could have just let her kill him.
Yeah, but he can't do that.
Why not?
I think there's a level... So there's a difference between letting someone win and knowing that in a fight they will win.
Okay, that brings up an interesting point.
You know, like if we fought...
I would win.
I have a very hard time punching people.
So, okay, that brings up an interesting point, though.
Because pinching. I'm a pincher, Cody. I'll pinch you.
I'm a tickler. I'm a tickler, and I scratch people with my scruff. With my face scruff.
Your scruff.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Cody hasn't shaved in a couple days. It would probably be lethal.
Yeah. Okay, but earlier, Elle Driver, she's actually really mad at Bud because Bud buries her alive, and she's like, that's not a warrior like that doesn't deserve to die by your hands, let alone being buried alive.
Yeah.
Like, Elle wanted to give her like a warrior's death. So you're saying maybe Bill was doing the same thing, like he wanted her to have like an honorable...
I think he wanted a warrior's death.
That's interesting as well.
Yeah.
But okay.
Because even when she gets him, which mind blow of the century, right? Maipei taught her
Pai Mei
taught her the five finger death punch.
Yeah,
that's a band. I know.
Five finger exploding heart technique.
So, yeah,
five point
exploding. Yeah, it is exploding heart technique.
Technique
where you just hit someone with your fingertips but and their heart explodes.
Even right before she does that scene where they're like her chair, she slides on her chair and. He goes to strike her with the samurai sword, and she catches it in the sheath.
Yeah,
that was it. Could have been, it wasn't a long fight. It was this long, drawn out conversation. Finally, the fight starts out of nowhere. It's with the sword. It's seated of all things. Such a cool choreography. And then she does the 5-point exploding heart technique.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Yeah, taught you."
Yeah. Which the other thing is, like, he could have done something in that moment when he was still alive. And, like, killed her, too. But he was like, well, you won. I think, I mean, he had the sword at that point.
It was sheathed, right?
I thought it was.
She got in the sheath, remember?
Yeah. But I thought, because there's a scene with her just holding the sheath. So that's what I was thinking. Maybe he had the bare sword
at
the very end there. But, like, he didn't do anything. He just kind of sat back and he's like, well, we've taught you.
I guess the other thing, too, is if he had killed her, what would have happened to their daughter?
Yeah, I think that's what he's like. One of them, he at least was like, one of us has to survive. We can't kill each other. But I think, like, I just got the vibe that he was like, she's most likely, like, he's like, I'm gonna do my best, but she's probably gonna kill me.
Yeah. Kind of thing. So interesting. I hadn't even thought of it like that, but I just love that last fight scene. Like, based on all the other ones, they're all a little different, but I thought that was such a cool way to end it.
Mm-hmm.
With that fight.
Yeah. And it's another thing of, like, him doing his life and death speech with the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what got me thinking of it, because it's like, she's been gone for a while. He could have, like, intercepted her and, like, gone to meet her before she came in and met the daughter, and then he could have just, mommy never wakes up.
Yeah.
But he, like, alludes to the fact that he had had a conversation about life and death and things die and go away and you need to, you know, it's part of life kind of thing. Almost like he's preparing her for this guy that's raised her for the past years. He's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And then passing her off to Uma Thurman.
Yeah.
Beatrix, the bride, Black Mamba, and 15 other things.
I like the ending, and I love that. So, in the very end, it's just them on the bed watching a cartoon.
Yeah, and I mean, even if he didn't, because, like, I don't think he was, like I said, going to let her win. He was going to try to win. And that's why he was like, take as much time as you want kind of with her. Like, you know, watch a long video, snuggle with her, and then come down and we'll do this when you're ready kind of thing.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It was a very cool exchange.
Yeah, well, because I feel like if you watch Kill Bill 1, you're like, there's that crazy anime scene and the crazy 88 scene, and, you know, it's definitely a good movie, but it's an action movie. Yeah. Very stylized one, but I think the way this one ends, it elevates the movie more.
Oh, yeah. And this one has the Pai Mei, which kind of counteracts that to some degree. But yeah, it was a really good ending to it. You know, because you, like I said, you expect it to be this over the top kung fu fight, but he went a different direction with it. Like you said, like, I bet you that fight in total wasn't even 30 seconds.
Oh, no way.
You know, it was like he tried to hit her, like, they flipped the chair around, maybe? She put the sword back 10 in.
10 seconds? And it's like so quick.
Yeah.
But really cool.
Yeah.
I love that it caught me off guard.
Yeah.
They were kind of just like talking, and then it just
happened.
And it's like, kind of the same thing with the eye pluck. I was like, oh, after this like really intense like fight, it was like, oh, that's how it's, that's crazy.
Yeah, which I love when movie makers do that, when they do something where you're like, oh, you know, well, they're gonna do this stupid drawn out thing, when it's like a classic example, which everyone's like, oh, it wasn't supposed to happen like that, which, you know, I don't know if necessarily it's true, is the Indiana Jones thing, where the guy pops out and he's got his sword and he's flailing it all about and shows he's a master, and he just shoots him.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, he was just tired and he shot him. And I'm like, but the guy had a thing to make him look like a bullet had hit him that would shoot stuff off of him. So obviously it was more planned than that.
It was such a good gag. Obviously it was written.
So it's like, maybe he was like, can I just shoot him? And that's why it was written. But it was not that scene that you watched. Was not improvised in the moment because there was so much more to it other than that needed to be done. Anyway, I digress. But just stuff
spoilers
like that.
For Raiders of the Lost Ark.
But just stuff like that's like when you're like, why doesn't he just do this? And then they do it, and you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, it's like if someone's trying to kill you, you're an assassin. You grab your hidden gun and you try to shoot him.
Yeah.
You know, just like in the first part of Kill Bill.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know. When they manage to make a cool scene that you're like, all right, I know what's going to happen next. And then they do something that's like completely unexpected. Like, I really like when they do that.
And it's kind of the same thing with when Bud dies. Because the snake's in the case, you're like, okay, they switched money for the sword, whatever. I mean, they used to work together. There's probably some level of respect there. And then it's like, oh no, got snaked in the face.
Well, I like how he shot it. So it's like when they split, so you just see Bud, you see her walk off and grab the sword, and then it cuts away from her as soon as she grabs it and is like looking at it, and it just looks at him and he's just looking at the case and going to open it, and I expected him to open it and it'd be empty and her kill him with the sword, but it's full of money, and you have that moment of even he's like, oh, there's actually money in
giggles,
here,
giggles, you know, he's like, he's super happy that he got his money,
which I almost felt like that was supposed to be like, oh, she actually brought the money. She didn't just show up and try to kill me.
Yeah.
And he goes through a couple layers before he gets to the snake.
Yeah, that's what was cool about it, is you're like, hey, took some money. And I knew it was going to happen because I've seen it before. Mm-hmm. But even then you're like, oh, it's like right in the middle there. And then he grabs the middle piles and snake.
Just gets him. Just goes, wah-tah! Several times. More than once. But I did think there's lots of parts in this movie where you're like, oh, I know what's going to happen next. And then it's just completely different than what you were expecting. Mm-hmm. Like the last crazy 88 she fights, it's just some kid.
Yeah.
That she like pulls off his mask and she's like, what? And she like spanks him with the sword and tells
like,
him
that's
to go
what
home.
You get for messing around with like Yakuza or whatever.
Yeah.
Makes him go home. Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, it's cool. I think it was really well done. I still, like I said, I think Pulp Fiction is my... I like that one better just because it was... I don't know. I guess it probably because it's less cheesy, but I really like the cheese in this one. You know, I like it a lot.
He doesn't, like, hint at it. he goes for it, and in that way I think it works.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if he had shied off it a little bit more, or if there wasn't certain things, like unexpected things that elevated the picture a little bit, or even like her daughter still being alive, and that whole last 40 minutes is like, oh, how's this gonna play out with her and Bill, you know, like I think those things make it a really great movie. And like they, it makes it all work, where it's not just a cheesy movie, it's like one done really well, where it's like, okay, let's actually try to make this a good movie, but it's still cheesy.
It's somebody, it, I think it's like what I said earlier, it's someone who loved the old cheesy kung fu movies but is now an extremely talented movie maker making a cheesy kung fu movie.
Yeah.
But putting, like, doing the best he can, like trying to make it a good movie while also leaving in all that, those cheesy fight scenes that everybody loves. Which there was more than once during these two films that I sat there and I thought, oh my gosh, why have they not paid Quentin Tarantino an obscene amount of money to make a Mortal Kombat movie?
Yeah.
Because the fight scenes and like the things that were done, like fatalities basically that she did on people, I was, yeah, like, oh my gosh. Like, you watch Mortal Kombat and like we had fun just flicking through the,
just watching a few scenes of the fight scenes, and yeah,
you know, and it's
your soul is mine.
Yeah. And it's like the best over the top cheesy, awful, yeah, video game slash kung fu movie.
Yeah.
But I would definitely go see a Quentin Tarantino Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah.
I feel like he would make it, he would have all those stupid fight scenes, he would still have Scorpion like randomly cartwheel from behind a very thin tree. Yeah. That you could clearly see him behind before, yeah, he cartwheels in and then quickly cut away. He would still do stuff like that, but mm-hmm, the story would be really interesting and good.
Yeah.
But this was pretty, it's close, I think, I'm ever gonna get to that, is this movie, and I, yeah, liked it a lot for that.
It's a good one. It, I think it's definitely a quintessential movie. Do you see it? Do you get it?
I got it.
I think I'm really proud of that one. Yeah,
because it's an essential movie to watch. That's where it's coming from, right?
You know, if you're talking Quentin Tarantino, I think this is definitely one of his really good ones, and it's one, mm-hmm, that you're going to think of him, and it embodies a lot of his style.
Yeah. I think, so, of the three, the only one that I'm not a huge fan of, and I think, honestly, probably the only one that I'm not going to be a huge fan of is the Inglourious Basterds.
Because for me, I think it probably goes, if I'm going to rank the Tarantino movies, I'd probably say best is Pulp Fiction. Next, Inglourious Bastards, Kill Bill, Death Proof, Reservoir Dogs, Hateful Eight. I haven't seen Django. Jackie Brown's actually maybe above Reservoir Dogs.
I've heard good things about Django. That's why I expect it to be above.
I know. I need to see it.
Inglourious Bastards. But most of my gripes from that come from, I feel like a lot of the stories in that movie are just dead ends.
Which one?
Inglourious Bastards. Whereas I feel like this one, that's why I like this one.
I disagree so much with you about that movie.
I know I disagree. But this one was, it was one story.
Yeah.
It wasn't a million different stories. It was one. And I liked that because it was so easy. I was like, I don't want another five different stories in the movie thing.
We'll save that for the Inglourious Basterds episode. But
even Pulp Fiction had a bunch of different storylines.
It's true.
That all merged together.
Yeah. They're all related.
Yeah.
I'll tie in.
It's like, this is Zed's bike.
Who's Zed?
Zed's dead, baby.
Good job. You nailed it.
I nailed it.
Well, anything else you need to touch on? Killed by anything you're just dying to talk about?
Nah. I think we covered everything. We got off topic quite a lot, as we usually do. But, I mean, I feel like Kill Bill is a very complex movie and a very simple movie at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, it's just her going around killing people.
Yeah.
But there's a lot to it.
Yeah.
You know? There's only, like, 8 people in the whole movie. They just put different makeup on them. Mm-hmm. Okay, see that. Anyway, yeah, I thought it was really good. I would give it 4 out of 5... Hanzo swords.
Wow. It's a lot of Hanzo swords.
It's a lot.
I think I'd agree with you. I think it's really solid.
Considering each one is priceless.
But you'll sell it for $1 million.
Only if I'm a bouncer at a strip club. And I already have one.
Yeah, and you already have one.
That my brother engraved.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely recommend this if you're looking to see what Quentin Tarantino's about. If you just want an action movie with a little bit of substance. Not a ton, but a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's well done. Fun movie.
I'd give it a solid scorpion cartwheel in a forest.
I would give it a... what's his name? Dang it.
Raiden?
Liu Kang?
Luke Cage? Isn't it?
No, Liu Kang.
Liu Kang?
Liu Kang, a wall run backflip.
Backflip?
I'd give it one of those.
Give it one of those. Do it right now.
I don't have the slow-mo technology to pull that off.
That's fair. Once we get 2 listeners, then we'll buy the Phantom camera. And we can do slow-mo. We can be the slow dudes.
Slow dudes.
Come at me, Gavin. I'm not a slow-mo guy. I'm a slow dude. I'm a not-so-fast guy.
Well, Tyler, where can they find us?
They can find us on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And on iTunes and Google Play and podcasts.com.
Oh, yeah.
All opinion havers. It's all of them. All under the same name.
Yeah. And if you want to reach out to us, if you want to bug me, if you want to request a movie, tweet me at opinion havers. I am so lonely on the internet.
Yeah. Cody also does reviews of movies that I refuse to go see.
I will. Sometimes I'll throw my opinions of movies I've seen that Tyler will not see.
I refuse.
If you want to know my opinion on a movie, you just tweet at opinion numbers.
Ask him about the barbed wire. Ask him about the barbed wire makeout. And he'll review that movie for you. Because if you're going to talk about a movie that I would refuse to watch with him, it is the barbed wire thing with the guy who barbed wire and he makes out with a girl. With what's-her-face.
It's a good one.
Pretty sure Cody described it as one of the worst movies he's ever seen.
That's not what I saw.
Worst movie. He put it right up there. I can't think of a movie you love right now. Okay. Anyway. They know where to find us now, Cody. They're going to stalk you on the internet.
So excited.
Now they know where you're from.
That's true.
Go to the diner. Tell him Cody sent you.
Yeah. Tell Brian Cody sent you.
Yep.
Well, until then, next time, have opinions.
And watch movies.